Hello, everyone, and welcome to Show Hoppers. Today we are covering The Regime, Season 1, Episode 4, Midnight Feast. I am Mr. Sal, a high school science teacher, watching The Regime for the first time as it is new on HBO, and Max, I guess. I'm doing so with my co-host and former student, Kurt. Hello, Kurt.
Howdy, everyone. Howdy, y'all.
Kurt, I'd like to begin with a moment of silence. Right, on to our ratings.
Ratings.
Did you appreciate that very long moment of silence?
It was excruciatingly long. Remember as a kid, we'd have moments of silence, and I would...
Yeah.
It was not fun.
So... Elena does the opposite of what Borat does. So,
the Borat is like a 5 minute or like 7 minutes.
We will now have 15 minutes silence. He drags it for the whole time. She just does a moment of silence, which is literally like a breath, and then she's off.
Anyhow, it's a thought that counts, right?
Well. All right, Kurt. So here's the thing about this episode. First of all, it's the Hugh Grant episode. I think you've been waiting for this episode, and this is the only one you're going to get. So,
what tells you that?
Well, the fact that he's dead now.
Well, any flashbacks, maybe.
Yeah, because they're really into flashbacks in this series. They jump forward.
They jump forward every time.
I don't think he's coming back. I know that you were looking forward to Hugh Grant. You got plenty of Hugh Grant in this episode. I think you love that. So I do think this is probably your favorite episode of the season so far, mostly because of Hugh Grant. Now, I don't know if there's a tinge of disappointment because that's all the Hugh Grant you get, and maybe you ding this episode for that. But more importantly, we are in the middle of episode 7 and 8 of Severance. So not dropping our coverage, but you and I are recording our coverage. We just recorded episode 7 and we're going to be recording episode 8. You were enamored with episode 7. I don't know how I felt about episode 8 yet because we haven't recorded that. But I'm not sure how this fits in with that. When you're that enamored with another series, does this pale in comparison? I do think it's your favorite episode of the season, though, so I'll say you gave it a 9 out of 10.
For you, you're a big Hugh Grant fan, right?
I am.
Okay.
I should say, like, not early Hugh Grant, but like mid-career Hugh Grant. And
now Hugh Grant.
Up to now. Now Hugh Grant, yes.
This Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant is a selling point for me now. He used to be a deterrent.
Oh
yeah! Back in the first thing these two did together, Hugh Grant and Kate Winslet, I think it was the first thing, was Sense and Sensibility. I hated that movie, and I watched it and I was like, this guy sucks. And like everything was just that. Everything he did was just like, ugh. they did a bit on Family Guy about Hugh Grant, where they put him up on a movie screen in the theater. And he goes, "Oh, I'm so charmingly befuddled," like, and that was his whole shtick. I think Hugh Grant is amazing now. I love him. Ever since About a Boy, that was the turning point for me. So About a Boy, it's like I'm a Hugh Grant fan.
Well, the coach kind of goes, how do you feel that they killed off Hugh Grant in this episode? I think you're all right with that, judging by... Well, I don't want to get into that because that might be spoilery, and we can talk about that after, I guess, your rating. But Hugh Grant stuff aside, how do you feel about the rest of this episode? Like, Herbert, Elena stuff, and the tricky trio. How does this all shape up for you? What did you give last episode again?
I think that one was the 9. Yeah, that was a 9.
Last one, 9. I think you gave this one a 10 then. I think you liked this one more than last week's.
Okay. Yeah, this is my favorite episode so far. I did give this a 10.
I debated whether or not I would give this a 9 or a 10. I've landed on a 10. I do enjoy it.
Wow. Okay.
Not a big Ed fan.
Really?
I'm joking. Yes, I was like, how would you give this a 10 and not like a...
Oh my god! I mean,
at least so, the parts.
Yeah. So look, I am disappointed that this is all the Hugh Grant we're going to get for this series. But man, it was a great way to showcase him. It's like, you know what? You get one episode, you know, make it count. And boy, did he. And boy, did they in the writing. It was fantastic. Every scene with Ed, I was enamored.
I respect it a lot. You know, there's always the talk of plot armor. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing about, well, I feel bad for showrunners or like people, you know, the creators of these series. If you get a famous actor like Hugh Grant, immediately my expectation, and I'm sure yours is too, is like, all right, well, he's going to be around now for the rest of the season, or at least, you know, he's a huge freaking Grant, right? Like,
yeah, now exactly.
It's like I'm halfway through the series to introduce him. He's surely around now. Like, we're not,
right.
You know, he's amazing. He's plotting
with Herbert.
Oh, yeah. Like, I know where this season's going easy now. Yeah. It looks like he overthrows inbound. Yep. So, them subverting expectations, that's not necessarily a good thing. They did do that in this episode, and I liked the way they did it. And so, good on them. But I think it's it takes some cojones to get some like Hugh Grant, mm-hmm. introduce him, make you fall in love, similar to like The Last of Us, and then they rip him away.
Well, I mean, did you fall in love with him?
I was into his character, yeah.
I was too, actually.
Yeah, I was like, this is the guy. I was like, I'm like, listen, if someone's gonna overthrow Elena, I'm all right with Ed doing it with Herbert. Yeah. It's fitting. And I mean, going off last episode, it's the breakup of Elena and Herbert.
Mm-hmm.
The plot seems like all right. We already postulated that maybe Herbert's gonna make a comeback. Of, you know, a coup attempt, especially now that he has like the claim of the foundling blood in him.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And now during this episode, they keep pointing at how weak her regime is. Like they clearly know what they're doing here. They're postulating that maybe they're going to do a coup attempt, but no, then they flip the script and Herbert's back and they're back together. So take that, Artful Dodger. That's how you have a quasi breakup and a comeback together.
That is true.
You took out the Artful Dodger, though. I did enjoy it.
Artful Dodger's great. Great stuff. Series. I totally agree. I loved this episode, too, it was almost too on the nose for the political allegory of our country at our point in history. Mm-hmm. It was like... Did you watch? Of course, you didn't. Did you watch the vignettes afterwards?
No, I did not.
Yeah. Okay. So Hugh Grant in an interview said that, you know, he was kind of the liberal populist, like almost kind of an Obama type character. I didn't see it that way as much as I saw him as like more like a Bernie Sanders type character.
Okay? I saw more of like a pragmatist. I don't know his left policies really though because they said he was a left person, but I don't know his exact policies. He was down with land reform and stuff, though.
He was anti-imperialist. Give it all back.
Yeah.
Like, give the land to the people, give the factories to the people. Like, he's on board with all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And he is Elena's political rival, who Elena then ousted, and now there are retributions for being her political rival.
Yes.
Which has been kind of talked about in the news lately.
It has, retribution.
I don't know. I think the title of there's like a companion podcast that goes with the series. I haven't listened to it, but I believe it's called Cautionary Tale. So, like, listening to Ed say things like, what does he say that like it really stuck out to me? It's like, shoot. It was like, I can't help you because you won't be helped. Like you, because what is it with you people? You want to
read my book or something?
Too, Well, you don't want to learn. What is it with you people that you can't, something about like your own self interest or something like that. Anyway, I think I have it in here somewhere. Yeah, like
you have a dream, but you just say it. You don't do it or something.
Yeah. Oh, here it is. You people refuse to choose what's best for you. Like it's which I don't want to get political on this podcast, but I mean I've often felt that frequently people vote in a way that surprises me, because it seems like what they want is being offered by the other party.
It can happen a lot. That can happen a lot. Yeah.
But we get caught up, or people get caught up on one issue that's important to them. And that's not in line with this person who's offering them everything else that they want. Or it can be that people get caught up in personality too. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what is being implied has happened here. That like the people, the Westgate people, or like the common people in general, would have been much better off with Ed. But they got caught up in Elena's other policies or her personality or whatever, and elected her into office, and now they're paying for it. America would have been better off with Ed, but they got caught up in Elena's congenial nature, like being more open to American influence, and now they kind of wish that they had Ed as well. So that all was very interesting to me. The Agnes stuff was interesting to me, because what do you do in that situation? You have to get out of there.
I mean, especially if it's going to be an overthrow. Yeah.
But is it a trap?
That's the big question.
You know, like, what do you do?
I'm glad to see they put Agnes in a hard situation, though, right?
Yeah, me too.
I'd love to see more of her. And there's still two episodes here. And yeah. I don't think we'll get too much of Agnes, but the bits we get are always good.
I think she could be a very important figure still.
Listen, I said she might be the one that takes the government. All right.
You did.
Right? So I don't, but I mean, just the airtime she has on the show.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I thought that the whole thing about the horse was really, really cool and really interesting here.
The political drama part, which is like Ed and Herbert, well, Ed's whole part for the most part. And then. Yeah. Elena dealing with this union and like or protesters in general, like that.
Right.
I think it was a good political drama with that stuff. Yep. Like it's.
Yeah, me too.
Well, besides what a political drama is, like you can just get problems out of thin air. Like you could just you can make whatever problem you need, and then we can see how the characters explore, like what the characters do for it. So like in this case, there's a problem with the unions. We know about the sugar beet stuff, and it was great. I mean, the horse incident, right?
Yeah.
There's a game that I showed you, Mr. Sal. You could do it on your phone. You can probably do it in browser too. Nation States, where you get to all it is, listeners, is that you could do Nation States is you make your own nation, and every like 2-3 hours you can go on the app. It'll save a few for you. And you just have issues that are presented to you. And however you want to do that issue affects your nation. Do you want to have like you could have like a communist utopia or like a libertarian utopia or like a dystopia or I don't, whichever way you want to end up making your country, you can make it just based on these issues. And I like that political dramas could do that. They present this horse issue, right? Elena, protesters today, horse kicked a woman, killing her and her unborn child. What is your reaction? Hers righteous indignation.
That's a horse. Horses get spooked. That's what they do.
don't bend the knee to the horse. I like it.
So there's another thing that came up a couple of times in this episode as well, and it came up earlier in the early part of the season one of Severance, which is actually what we're dropping right now. I think we just dropped episode 3 of Severance. But I believe it was episode 2 where it came up there too. And that's this a theme of kind of captors or dictators expecting gratitude. And I'm really interested in this, because I had another teacher say to me just this week, I believe the quote was, you know, the older I get, the more I find that my least favorite character trait in any human is ingratitude. And I thought about that, and I was like, you know, I don't think I like that take.
Why?
I really don't think I like that. Because I think if you're saying that, if you're saying like what I hate most about you is ingratitude, that kind of implies that you think that they should be grateful
or blank
for I mean, I guess first of all, me, right? second of all, whatever it is that you have, and I'm all about gratitude. I mean I do try like regularly to focus on things that I'm grateful for, and I think since I've started that practice, it has made me a happier person.
I agree wholeheartedly with that sentiment.
Yeah,
trying to be grateful for things makes you a happier
person. But when you're dictated to, you should be grateful, I think that's an indication that there's something wrong here. So when Elena says this to the children, I can't remember the exact quote, but she's giving her Q&A session with the kiddies. Rations,
maybe.
It wasn't about the rations. Right. It was more, she like stopped what she was talking about. It had nothing to do with the question. And she was like, you know, actually, you know, okay. this is, why can't you just let me do my job and be grateful?
Yeah. Okay. Like,
so it wasn't even anything to do with the question. It was like, she was upset about the horse and it was like, let me do my job and be grateful. You know, I won you the Fabian Corridor. Be grateful, you know, and we heard Milchick say it in Severance when I guess Mark brought up the concept of death and he's like, no, death can't happen here. Like, I mean, how about a little gratitude for that? You know, how about a little gratitude for your cell? So I don't know. This concept is really interesting to me. It keeps coming up. I keep seeing it. And again, I'm a fan of gratitude when it comes from an internal source. I think people focusing on being the things that they are grateful for is a really healthy thing to do. And again, it's made me a happier person. I don't ever want to be dictated to by someone, you should be grateful for this, when it's something that is upsetting me.
That, yeah, I don't think I can really argue with that.
Yeah. But anyway, so that comes up here too. And then the end of the episode is it's so over the top. I just couldn't even believe what I was watching.
Dude, I thought it was going to be a dream. I thought it was a dream at first. I was like, is this one of Herbert's dreams? Like, is he going to wake up?
How could it not be?
Is Ed still alive? or did he kill Ed, went to bed, and like, this is all a dream after killing Ed, like Mr. Leeskin comes and whisks him away into Elena's office.
I mean, Nikki is right there. They take him out. They ask her, they're like, no, leave them alone. Let them finish. Like, are you kidding me? That's nuts. I was so bonkers. Never expected to see that. I mean, I expected to see them hook up possibly, but not just in front like of this. Everyone.
Yeah, not like this.
Yeah, I mean, he probably is very ripe too. My God. He's been in the, you know, whatever months. That cell was.
Yeah.
Yeah, 4 months. Sleep deprived. Just killed the guy. He's got death on his hands. Oh, man. Yeah. So I loved this episode. I thought it was really entertaining and really interesting. Made me think about a lot of stuff. And
yeah,
and it was cool.
And we see Elena, I guess, backslide in terms of her health conscious ways. So, you know, the progression of the series, she starts off as what we felt like a hypochondriac, paranoid. And in this episode, I see a lot of that basically. I mean, it's different now. It's not mold in the waltz, but it's too
Oscar's
hot.
Breath. That's too hot. Yes. Well,
Oscar's breath might actually be bad. I won't even complain about that. I could just
Agnes hasn't noticed.
Oh, she might. She's not saying. Oscar's breath could definitely be something. But she said about everyone's breath. But it's just Oscar's.
Yeah.
Whatever. Everything's too hot, and like, she cares about the air she breathes in when she's at Westgate, and she's you know, she's breathing from her oxygen tank, her air mask, and stuff. So she seems to. Is this cyclical? No, she has Sebastian before. She had Herbert once, got rid of him. It looks like he's coming back. Or, you know, it seems like a very toxic relationship right now.
I mean, yes, yeah, certainly not healthy.
I'm sure we all know. And maybe even yourselves, you know, you've been in a relationship, broken up, maybe you get back together. Maybe you know the people that have done that. Maybe they've done it more than twice, three times.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. But and, I mean, you know what? He goes for the throat again. But this time, it is welcome. So that's an interesting little dynamic as well. I don't know. Anyway, it's an interesting episode. Kurt, I think I'd like to take a guess at your favorite scene.
Favorite scenes.
So my immediate reaction is it's got to be something with Ed. It's got to be something with Hugh Grant in it. Although I did a semi rewatch of the episode, and I do think there's an outside chance that you picked the Q&A with the kids, but I can't go against your affection for Hugh Grant. I got to go with the Hugh Grant scene. I'm going to say it's Ed and Elena, the one scene that they share together.
Okay. Listeners, Mr. Sal, I may have paid for every podcast, but he is a teacher. He has children. Congratulations, true. By the way.
Thank you.
So you love children. Can I say that?
I love my children. I love my students. I don't want to go any farther than that.
That's I wasn't trying to paint that picture. My bad. you work with children. You welcome when they ask questions. You always have an answer. I think you'll love a good Q&A. So I don't even think you remember quite what was said in the scene, but you were just so happy to see a Q&A. Like seeing a learning experience for children just brought you a grin ear to ear, because that's the type of person you are. You love teaching. So you love seeing these students learn, or children learn. So you're
saying the Q&A was my favorite scene, is what
you're
saying.
No, I think your favorite scene was... I think it had to be an Ed scene, actually.
Are we having fun? Yeah? Good. Okay.
All right, fine. Q&A. Fine. You got me. All right. Your favorite scene is Q&A.
Okay. Nah, you should have gone with the other instinct. No, it's not the Q&A. My favorite scene was what I guessed for you. It's the Elena and Ed scene.
That's a very good scene. I thought about picking that scene. I also thought about picking one of the Herbert Ed scenes. Which I guess I ultimately did. I went with the near final scene, which is when Herbert kills everyone.
Yes.
Because just because of that twist. I mean, it's more of the it's just because of the jaw dropping effect. And I don't want to give any spoilers for any other series, but the jaw dropping effect of just, man, I was not expecting that.
It's no,
really,
exactly.
This is really put everything into twist. And I don't know whether you include him being woken up by Mr. Laiskin the next day.
I don't think so.
Was that just its own scene? Him getting woken up?
No, I would include that with the last scene more than I would include it with this scene.
All right, you're right, because they have a diet right away. You're right. Okay, no, it's very fair then. Even without that,
I agree. And honestly, there's probably more to think about in this scene than your favorite scene than there is in my favorite scene. I mean, you know, he doesn't dream anymore. It's like he's dead. Like, dreams are important to him. Okay. That's something that we've come to see through the whole series. They shared their dreams, right? They from the first time he sees her, I'll see you in my dreams. Do I know you from a dream? Like, dreams are important to him. And with Ed, he doesn't have them. That's important. I mean, that means a lot. He doesn't love Ed. Right? He doesn't love him. He said, I don't love you. I should. I probably could. I probably would, but I don't. And this is what I mean when I say it's more about the person than it is about the policies. He loves Elena. He doesn't love Elena's policies. He's trying to make Elena's policies his policies.
He is,
Ed already shares his policies. But it's not about the policies. It's about the person. He loves Elena. He doesn't love Ed. End of story. Sorry, Ed, you're out. He says to Ed, look at me. That's that line that keeps coming up. Look at me. Right? She says it. Elena says it to Herbert when she's smacking him around in episode one. He says it back to her at the end of episode one when he convinces her to arrest the madam of the shrinking GDP or whatever, Our Lady of the Shrinking GDP and the physician. He says it again here to Ed, look at me, right before he kills him. And this is where Ed brings up all his, you know, you people refuse to choose what's best for you. He uses the, whenever you use the phrase, you people, you're in trouble, right? Like, you can't use that phrase. There's nothing good ever came of that.
So I want to just say this for listeners. In high school, I used to get teased relentlessly because I would say you people always, but I would say it for like you all. Like I would say to my friends, I'd be like, you people. And then,
I
don't know. I don't do it anymore now. It's the connotation of it. Yeah. Just, but no, yeah. The way Ed's saying it is not kind to Herbert.
No. And ultimately, it's the invocation of the word butcher again that sets Herbert off, and that set him off in the previous episode with Elena, and now it sets him off here with Ed. But there's nothing Ed can do; he's dead.
We've been saying a lot of good things about Ed, and I think Ed seemingly is more policy driven than Elena. That all being said, though, he certainly I don't see Machiavellian, but somewhat snake like he's or like a politician. In some ways, like, you know, he seems to be saying things to make Herbert happy, right?
Oh, yes.
We did bring you up in the meeting. I forgot, Herbert. Here's what we said. Hey, don't call him butcher. No. Don't call him butcher, Herbert, right?
Yeah.
So the fact that earlier in the episode, he tells the guard, don't call him butcher, right? Call him by his name here. And then he calls him butcher later.
He speaks the bull crap. That's too many words. What he does. Too many words. You speak too many words. I can do, he says. But yeah, it's really that. Herbert even says it in the scene. I see you now. Like, he sees this is a politician saying what he needs to say to get his way. Right. And ultimately, Ed probably believes in his policies. But, you know, when Herbert invokes the, you know, and we'll cut America right out of it and says, yeah, of course, eventually. First, we got to lift some sanctions, stabilize the economy so it was not a complete catastrophe, and then we're done with them. Like, so Herbert understands what he's dealing with here.
He does.
Because he's been dealing with it with Elena. She was the same way. Yes, she agrees with his policies, but when push comes to shove, no. The what's it called? The Tricky Trios organization.
The holding company
is really what matters, and so... he's been dealing with this already, and that was with someone that he loves. He doesn't love Ed. He can't deal with that stuff with Ed. And all the while, through this whole scene, there's this intercut scene of them, the government planting American money and guns in the offices of the sugar beet union. So it looks like there's an American conspiracy.
Yes. The corrupt government. Well, I mean, it's not corrupt. She doesn't tell him to do it directly, just very heavy implications.
Yeah. So, I mean, this favorite scene of yours is probably the most thought-provoking scene. There's so much here to kind of latch onto and really like lay awakes thinking about.
It depends. I mean, the Elena Ed stuff is really interesting for like the lore this year. Like, just there's clearly a lot of history in the characters, and it's like a chance to see them speaking candidly. Now they almost have a facade in front of everyone they talk to. They're constantly they're both master manipulators, and you know they know each other's craft, and they're I guess the mask slips off for both of them. They're just talking very candidly. It's cool to see. It's almost when you get to hear a character's inner monologue, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the filters are off because neither one of them has anything to lose. Like, Elena doesn't have anything to prove to Ed. He's literally a punching bag for her. And they actually said exactly those words in the vignettes afterwards. She goes there when she needs a punching bag. And so that's what she's doing. She's going there to get her workout in and punch him around a little bit because she just got kicked around by these kids. Actually, the kids didn't really do anything. She ended up kicking herself around in front of the kids. But there's that piece of it. And I think this is just a really entertaining scene. This is just the two prolific actors get to go at it with each other and just go barb for barb. It's so good. It's like,
he points out flashback. This is the only scene we'll see them share.
Right. Exactly. You know, And he points out the irony of her swearing off the Americans, who much preferred her to him. And this is like one of the things I was trying to bring up earlier, that where policy is concerned, there's probably policy that you would prefer, but ultimately it's the person that, you know, shares your one policy, the one thing that's important to you that you're going to go with. Or maybe it's just their personality altogether. For America, it was Elena is willing to work with us and Ed is not. But now they've been cut out. So there's an irony there. He insults her wonderful way with half-wits, right? And I love this. This is really interesting to me. He says, you turn their pain into anger and use their angle as your cudgel, which sounds extremely familiar to me. I don't know if it does to you or not, but it sounds very familiar to me. You turn their pain into anger and use their anger as your cudgel. But now they're turning that cudgel on you and you're scared. Right? And that's the danger of doing that. When you weaponize pain, you run the risk of being on the receiving end of the punishment. So, and that's what she's dealing with now. And it looks like it's leading to or in the direction of civil war.
That's all right, though, because she'll be the protector.
That's right. You better to be the protector than the aggressor. But he also wants to know where his family is. So apparently either Elena has taken his family or his family has fled the country or whatever. She thinks they're in Lisbon. But she leaves instructions for Tom and Vin to work Ed's face and torso, but leave some for later. And we'll see later that they have been working the face, at least.
Dude, it's pretty dark, this part of it. Like, these guards are like his friends.
I know.
But they're like, all right, we got to rough you up, you. Or, I mean, Ed.
Yeah. Yeah. He takes his glasses off. And he's like, okay, my lovelies, let's go. Let's get this over with. Anyway, so yeah, I mostly love that scene just for the sake of hearing these two go after each other, just watching these two on screen together. But I really do love this idea of turning pain into anger and using that anger as a cudgel. I don't love the idea. I see it play out.
Cudgel is a very big word.
It's two syllables, man.
It's a word I wouldn't otherwise understand without context clues. And even then, I question if I know what it is.
It's
some
club.
Weapon. Okay.
Yeah, it's like a club.
So, see, I was wrong. I thought it was like a knife. Yeah, I was just I knew it was like a weapon.
Yeah.
All right.
So anyway, so those are our favorite scenes. It's time to play the game that's sweeping the nation, or at least this podcast. Who said it?
Who said it?
After last week's embarrassment, Kurt, I'm pulling a what's his name? I can't believe I can't remember. Kyle Bedrosian. I'm pulling a Kyle Bedrosian and waving the white flag and calling a truce.
It was also because listeners, check out in the in between, we've recorded two episodes of Severance, episode six, episode seven.
No.
And yes, I played the game. Mr. Sal, I think, wanted me to play it in episode
six. In episode six. Ugh, that was horrible.
That's the way Mr. Sal wants the game played.
No, it's not, though, and you know it's not.
Well, listen to Severance, get to Who Said It of episode six, and yeah. You'll see how I feel Mr. Sal wants the game played. So.
Which is not true, but you'll be entertained. So, yes, do check that episode out. I'm calling a truce here. I'm just going back to basics. I got three quotes for you.
Ah, so we've deflated.
We've deflated.
That was good for an economy, but I'm all right with it in this instance. We'll see.
We're down to three. I don't have none of them use the term "of course." So I don't know. So I think these are too easy, but we'll see how this goes. Okay. First quote: be better at being normal.
See, like, this is what gets me. If this is a hard quote for me, be better?
Be better at being normal.
Huh.
I thought this was the easiest one. I was like, this is not even worth giving him.
Oh, so I, Okay, I remember now what this is. I should have verbalized better. I was sticking through the characters. I was like, does like Ed say this to like Herbert, or like is someone saying this to Herbert, or is like Elena saying this to someone? And then I realized, yes. Who does Elena say it to? From the Jumbotron. She's coming the down. She's in her, it's hot. She's in her ice bath, and she's coming to you live on the Jumbotron saying, you all are kind of weird and need to be more normal. You're killing the vibes, people. Killing the vibes. That's the summation of what she said.
Oh, yeah, you got it. That's great. I really liked your summation, too, actually. That was really good. So, yeah, Elena is joining the cabinet via video chat from her ice bath. And she tells them that they need to be better at being normal, or else she feels like she's not normal. And then she wishes they were all dead. And the context here is that it is freezing in this place.
No, it's hot.
She's on fire. Like everybody else, like this, one of the cabinet members says he would slit his family's throat for a scarf.
Yeah. So,
like they're all freezing except for Elena.
Let them wear coats.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Because that would not be normal. They need to act normal.
Exactly.
So that she feels normal. Otherwise, she wants them all to die. So that's intimidating coming from your chancellor, but they tell her about the mounted officer's horse at the Westgate protests that got spooked and kicked a pregnant woman, and both mother and child died. She'll do, as a result, if she has to, she'll do a question and answer session with Westgate children, but they have to come to her at the palace. All right. So this is where we first learn about the horse. And they don't, none of them want to tell her about the horse.
No, they word it in like a very...
Yeah.
Not dead death way.
Yeah. And they also like they kind of take, it's kind of like a relay race.
No one takes all the blame.
Pass the baton and they all do a little bit of telling her about the horse. Anyway, okay. You're one for one. On to quote number two. Ready? All
right. Yes.
Burn it if fire still exists at this temperature.
All right. Well, obviously it has to be in the palace, but oh man, I did definitely hear this before.
Yes, you did.
But when and who says it? This
that is the name of the game.
This is definitely. You stop. Oscar does not say this. Elena would not say this. So I could see Nikki saying it. I could see Agnes saying this. And I could see basically any of the political members saying it. Say it one more time for me. Maybe not
burn it if fire still exists at this temperature.
Okay, they're burning something. At least they want to get rid of. So we see, I guess. Oh man, this is gonna kill me. I don't want to sit here thinking it through so much, but I also I could easily get this if I wanted to sit around and think about it, but I don't want to waste your time. I don't want to waste the listener's time. And
you sound a lot like me right now. And I'm picking up.
And I'm just filling as I'm thinking, and I'm not really thinking about what I'm saying. And it's
I'm picking up the impersonation. I do appreciate it.
No, I don't actually know if you do the second part of what I said, because I legitimately I'm just trying to. Okay, I am trying to.
It's a stall tactic.
It is. I am trying to stall. I am trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Burn it. Oh, jeez. What could they possibly be referring to? Oh, this kills me. It's got to be Nikki saying it. I think it's either Nikki or it's Agnes. I mean, it could be any of the political members. Okay, I'm sorry. This is the last time you have to say it. I just really want to get this quote.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I'll say it one more time.
It's just really killing me.
Burn it if fire still exists at this temperature.
Burn it. What would they be burning? I don't know. Okay. I legitimately have no idea what they're burning. Is there a part where Nikki is talking with burn it? Okay, whatever. You know what, actually? I'm gonna have to ask the listeners for help.
Oh.
Which is
phone a friend. No, poll the audience.
So either you guys can email showoppers@podcast.gmail.com or through new podcast technology, if you say it out loud, I'll hear it. So, Fermi, please say the person who said it to whom in the scene. All right. Okay. Thank you, listeners. I have no idea. You've all said different scenes. That was very useless. I have no idea. I heard it. I heard you, the listener. I don't think I didn't hear you. I just don't know. I just don't know. Out of all the jumbled mess, who someone said the Ed and Herbert scene. That one I think is a really weird one, but I just gotta say something. I'm sorry. This is killing me because I definitely heard this and I don't know, and this hurts. So I'm just gonna go with they're like filming something and it's Nikki and Elena, and Nikki says to someone to burn something offhandedly. There,
they're filming the fondue commercial thing about date night.
Yeah.
Okay. I will give you a third of a point for that, because Nikki does say it, but it's not that scene, and it is not to Elena. Certainly not to Elena.
Oh yeah, well, I didn't say Elena, just someone. It's not Elena though. No. Yeah, no. That
but Elena's there.
That's fair. So I don't know if what is it?
Okay. It's very early in the episode. Nikki is coming up the stairs and he sees a guard wearing a coat and he says, "Take that off. What are you wearing?"
Yeah,
burn it if shit fire still exists at this temperature.
I referenced the can't even wear
you codes. Did the can't even wear coats. You did.
I remember now you say it. Oh,
yes,
man.
I could
hear Nikki's voice.
You did. Yeah, I mean, you knew it was Nikki. You were on Nikki.
And you
want
the saddest part too? None of the listeners said that scene.
Unbelievable, listeners.
You guys didn't know it either. You guys didn't know it either.
You know, you should be grateful that I told you that I told you the actual correct answer.
No, but thank you.
None of you knew
it. I appreciate it.
Kurt, you should be grateful that they tried to help you, even though they were all wrong.
No, I am very grateful. All right.
Anyway, okay, yes. So Elena is very hot as she shares a bed with Oscar, which I'm sure is not doing any positive thing for the heat that she's feeling. But she's loaded up with air conditioners. There are air conditioner units all over the place. She summons Nikki, who, like the rest of the palace, is very cold. And Elena is back to old habits. We hear her complaining about Oscar's breath. You know, Nikki pops the breath mint before he goes in. He pops one in Oscar's mouth when he gets there. Oscar is now her hygrometer boy. So the hygrometer is back. She wants that dry air. And even though his breath smells like feces, and Elena asks Agnes, "How is it?" She refers to, I assume, Herbert as it. How is it? Agnes says she hasn't had time to inquire today, but he does sleep, and she says, "Oh, okay. Well, at least there's that." So, not even using a personal pronoun, but rather just it.
Abe.
So how the mighty have fallen. But don't worry, he got knocked down, but he gets up again.
You're never gonna keep him down. The meteoric rise once more of Herbert Zubak.
That's right.
He's got
I think
ball.
I think you're gonna get this last one.
All right, thank you.
Ready?
I need this.
Yeah, you got this.
Otherwise, well, actually, what is that?
You don't have to love me.
You don't have to love me.
Yeah.
I mean, probably Nikki's saying this to Elena, and that's why her and Herbert do it at the end. But no, you don't have to love me.
Yeah, you don't have to love me.
Just to fear me. No. Okay. I mean, I'm assuming it's Ed to Herbert, right? I actually don't remember a character saying this. So it's not like the last one where I remember someone saying it, but I didn't remember where. I just don't remember this being said, but just the context of it. Say it one more time.
You don't have to love me.
Does a union leader say anything like that? No. Does Elena say that during her tirade? No, that's your favorite scene. No, it wasn't. Never mind. No. That's what I guessed for you. It was the Q&A. The Q&A tirade. It was not your favorite scene. Tired. That's what I guessed for you. You don't have to love me. I'll go with them. I think Ed says it to Herbert, and I think he says it in my favorite scene.
Yeah, he does. Okay. That's right. You got it. That's why I said I thought you'd get this, because we basically have already talked about this. But yeah, Herbert says, you know, I don't love you. I should, and I probably would, but I don't. And Ed responds with, you don't have to love me.
Yeah. And that's why I guess that makes most sense there.
Yes. All right. Good job. You got, what, 2 1/3 out of 3? That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's what, like a 95?
No, it's not a 95.
Half is never my strong suit.
I think maybe a 74?
I never.
73?
I never knew percentages. Just throw out a random one. Let it stick. Let it ride. Say it with confidence, people believe you.
Usually. That is usually the case. All right, Kurt, let's recap the rest of the episode. Well, it's an interesting opening. We've jumped 4 months ahead. There is now a partnership, an official partnership with China. Herbert can't sleep because regulation dictates that the radio stay on. The radio is like a perpetual stream of Elena streaming right into Herbert's ear. Now, I thought this was a prison and this was regulation within the prison. But this is, I mean, it's kind of a prison, but it's more like a dungeon in the palace.
Yeah.
And this seems to be designed specifically for him.
So this is a torture technique. This is done you know, people can't sleep and it drives you crazy. Ozark has this, actually.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's with heavy metal.
Yeah. Check it out, listeners, in our back catalog. We've covered all of Ozark. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I called it, even though this is actually not the proper term for it. You're right. Dungeon makes a lot more sense. But I like saying catacombs. I called it the catacombs.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I suppose Ed probably gets the radio too, because he does, in the inscription in the book, he does say that damn radio, eh? Or whatever.
Or he was once in that room. The radio's in that room and they break you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, the break room. a lot of parallels between this and Severance, apparently. We're covering Severance right now. Check it out. Season 2 is on the way this year, presumably, 2024.
Allegedly.
Yes. Anyway, Herbert can't sleep because of this radio. In the yard, he sees a man in what looks like a cowboy hat, maybe gardening. This is Ed.
Oh, this is Ed. Oh, you know, I never went back and looked at it. I was like, who's this cowboy guy?
It's Ed.
I couldn't tell that was Hugh Grant with his hat on.
Yeah.
Then I know that was Hugh Grant. All right.
That's him. Yeah. Elena blames the Americans and Keplinger for the lies about the struggling sugar beet industry in the West Gate. And Herbert finally passes out to Elena's taunts. Elena is, we already talked about the second scene, she's very hot. Everybody else is very cold. Next scene, Herbert receives a personalized signed copy of Edward Keplinger's book.
How sweet.
Elena then joins the cabinet via Jumbotron, and we'll move on from there. Agnes gets a text, says your situation is untenable, but there's a way out for you. And that is all that she gets at this point in time. She does respond with, leave me alone or something like that, just dismissive, because this is terrifying. What if this is someone working for Elena trying to test Agnes's loyalty? Mm. Now, Elena is very paranoid. This does seem like something that she would do, test the people close to you.
Similar to another series that we've covered, Culprits.
Similar to Culprits, yes. Check out Culprits. Love Culprits. Such a great movie.
Really, that's very underrated. Underrated. Breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I'm shocked by
how. Well, it breaks my heart more.
Probably, but I'm shocked. I'm shocked by how many people don't know about Culprits. You should watch Culprits. It's on Hulu or Disney Plus, depending on where you are. You definitely check it out.
So
just watch the first episode. If you don't like the first episode, stop.
Really?
Because the first episode is really great.
Yeah, give the first episode a try. Yeah. Going back to me, you know, talking about how it breaks my heart more. So there's other aspects in life, but the one I always use as an example of people always trying to people just trying to one up each other. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was in high school that it'd be the morning, there's time before class, so we'd be chatting like by our lockers and whatever have you. And it would always turn into like a contest. You know, someone would come and be like, "Oh, I'm tired. I only got 6 hours of sleep." "Oh yeah? Yeah. You only got 6 hours? I got 5. Oh yeah?" And like it becomes a big one up in contest. Like, "I'm more tired." That's what it is, okay? So there's other examples of that.
I know, I hear you. I'm frequently dismayed by how many people just wait for their turn to tell you how much more extreme their situation is than yours, whatever the extreme is.
You're like, "Yeah, I'm feeling really sick lately." And he goes, "Oh, yeah, my sinus, I'm so stuffed." It's like, "Well,
I think my spleen ruptured." Like,
my stools, blood red.
So I'm telling you,
it's human nature. It's just I don't know, people just do that.
It is human nature, but I do think that most people are just completely unaware of it. But I hope I
don't do that.
I don't think you do, and I hope I don't either. I really like, I it bothers me when other people do it, so I try not to do it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway, all right. Next scene, and I've lost my place. Where were we? Where is it? We on the kitty Q&A yet? I don't think we are.
No, we're not.
No. We're on the first. Sorry, we're on the first midnight feast. Herbert meets Ed for a midnight feast. His residence in the mountains is, he says, a bit of movie magic. They take him there every once in a while to film something so that it looks like he has a mansion in the mountains. But no, he lives here. He claims he's a prisoner, but he still wields plenty of control over Tom and Vin. Now, I don't know. I mean, by the end of this episode, clearly he is a prisoner. But it seems like he just treats Tom and Vin well. They treat him well. It's a mutually beneficial relationship.
Yeah, it's nicer if the guard. Yeah. Better than antagonistic. And maybe they're sympathetic to him, you know?
Yeah, they might be sympathetic to his politics. They might be hoping that he someday takes back over and gives them a place in his cabinet. Like, who knows? So, yeah. Anyway, Agnes gets more texts, and she helps Oscar brush his teeth. She tells these texters to stop, and then we get the kitty Q&A, which is a fantastic scene, too. I did almost pick this as my favorite scene, but gotta have Ed in your favorite scene here. But Elena passes on Singer's idea to start with a moment of silence and jumps right into the questions. No need for rations, but be frugal. Cut down. I myself have cut down on butter and wine, and it's good for me. So, you know, just, you know, be a little more careful about what you consume. No rations, no scary words like that. And she moves on to have some pride.
But I just want to say, it's just funny. It's like cognitive dissonance. No, maybe it's so funny. You'll have everything you need, just ration. You'll have everything you want. Did she say want as well, or just need?
She said all of your favorite treats.
Okay, that's okay.
Yeah, you'll still have all your favorite treats. And then the next question asker says, I live with my parents in Westgate. And she says, yes, I thought I smelled something. And the singer says, because there's silence after she says that. And the singer goes, oh, too bad, that usually plays. But she does spin it. And she's like, I love the smell of factory. Smells like jobs. She's so cool. She's quick on her feet, but she also is very impulsive. So I thought I smelled something, but she goes off on her tirade here. Have some pride. Let me do my work and be grateful. And I love the way that Kate Winslet plays this, how she always, like, when she gets very upset, she speaks out the side of her mouth. Have you noticed that?
No, I have not.
Oh, yeah. You're going to notice it now. Like, she spends a lot of time speaking out this, like, her mouth moves to the side and she speaks out the side of her mouth. Anyway, I assume that that's a reference to speaking out both sides of your mouth. I haven't noticed if she's always going one way and never the other. Okay. It's possible that she is going both ways with that. That would be interesting. But anyway, before the third question, she goes on a tirade about the horse and blames the pregnant woman, the giant tuna, or whatever she calls her, for being there. She also gets a nosebleed, and she blames the Americans for that lefty Marxist Keplinger for sowing unrest.
I actually want to quickly circle back to these questions these kids are asking.
Okay.
Did the Tricky Trio orchestrate these questions?
Well, they vetted the kids anyway.
Okay. They vetted the kids, but did they get these questions submitted?
I would think so. I think the kids were handed the question. Right? Didn't the kids get the paper handed to them?
I don't know by whom, but I mean, they definitely didn't write these questions. I forget, a kid says some sort of wording, and someone in the
Right.
is like, oh, yeah.
The China of it all.
Yes, the China of it all.
And I think, I can't remember if it's Singer or the guy whose name I can never remember, but always should remember because Schiff, there's a reference. Schiff, yeah, okay. Yes, it is Schiff. So I know that one of them says to the other one, because kids talk like that. Kids say that. So yeah, I do think that they may have written these questions.
Now, my second follow-up to that is, does Elena know they wrote the questions, or is this them trying to like undermine her in some way? I'm assuming she knows, but
I would assume that she would want control over this.
Who knows though? Who knows?
I guess we don't. But anyway, she gets told by the physician that yes, the air was quite dry in there, and you know, very cold. I mean, hot. It was very, very hot. She goes, "Are you on crack?" she yells at Oscar too because the air was too dry and because his breath smells awful. All right. Then she goes to her punching bag, Eddie, and we'll skip ahead to Elena seeing Herbert on the way out after she talks to Ed. As he listens to the radio, blame brain fog and nose, or blame the CIA radio wave attacks for Elena's brain fog and nosebleeds. So, I mean, this is a thing that comes up in conspiracy theories all the time. It's like somebody's shooting radio waves and pulses at these people, and that's why they're behaving in this way. So that's what Elena is blaming the nosebleeds on, and the brain fog is these radio waves sent by the CIA.
It's cool technology, though. Like, there's sorry?
Did I teach you about the ghost frequency? I think I did, right?
No, I don't know. If you did, okay. I don't remember it.
So the human eyeball has a natural frequency, a very low natural frequency. I think it's like 20 hertz or something like that. It's really low. So the idea is if you are around emissions of that frequency, like it causes your eyeball to resonate. Your eyeball
vibrates. What does that cause?
So your eyeballs vibrate.
Eyebrows.
Sorry, it's your eyeballs. Yeah. Can you imagine vibrating eyebrows? Now I want to see that. Anyway, your eyeballs vibrate and it causes blurred vision. And sometimes, like people, it's called the ghost frequency because people, you know, say that they, you know, thought they saw things that weren't there. They saw ghosts but it's because their eyeballs are vibrating. So
that's freaky.
Yeah. So, I mean, the ghost frequency, maybe they were hitting Atlanta with the ghost frequency.
They also they do have, like, I want to try one of these. I don't know if you can buy them consumer grade. I think you can buy them though. You can get a hold of like specialized speakers that like output. They're not going to give you brain fog or anything, but they output very directionally. It could go like, you know, like 10, 20 meters, like quite a bit. But they're very directionally focused. So only if you're in front of it, you hear it. And if you're like a little off of it, and apparently it's very eerie. Like,
right.
Because you hear it so well. It's very targeted. It's a lot louder than like you're used to. And it feels weird to hear it. And then,
And then not hear it.
Yeah. And then not hear it.
So you're like, I can stand here, hear it, and then take a step to the right, and now I don't hear it anymore?
Yeah, and probably, definitely by two, you wouldn't hear it. Yeah, I would think. I don't know if you can hear it a bit. I don't know what like the bleed over is on it, but yeah.
That's pretty nuts.
It is cool. So anyway, brain fog aside.
Yes.
And CIA caused nosebleeds.
That's right. So we get another midnight feast, and Ed tries to convince Herbert to let her go, let Elena go. And definitely don't read his book. Like it's
really
do not read the book. Yeah, it's like the Brer Rabbit, which I don't know.
Know what that is.
Brer Rabbit was it was a Disney series that was based on the stories of Anansi, which when Anansi Boys finally drops on Prime, we will cover Anansi Boys. I've read that book. I really enjoy it. Anansi is like the spider trickster god of, I believe it's Ghana. And it's all one of the Br'er Rabbit stories, which is based on an Anansi story, is whatever you do, don't do this thing. And it's designed intentionally to make them do that thing, right? So by saying don't do it, you're enticing them to psychology. Do it. Yeah, exactly. So
don't listen to our back catalog, listeners.
Yeah, whatever you do, do not listen to our coverage of Dexter New Blood. Don't do it.
Wait, no. I want them to.
Oh, okay. But I don't. Don't do
it. I'm not bad at this.
Anyway, so that's the impression that I got here was that Ed actually does want him to read the book. So he's saying, don't do it. He may also be saying, don't do it because it's just kind of a jab at, you know, it being illegal propaganda. So, no, you definitely shouldn't do that. But
I also think it's because he's got nothing else going on, too. Right? Yeah. It's like, don't do that. Just sit there bored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other, I think the reason for this midnight feast is for Herbert to see what has happened to Ed's face as a result of Elena. And just kind of paint her in a worse light.
Yeah, you don't want to love her.
Nah.
Why couldn't you couldn't you love Ed?
No. So Elena and Nikki film a date night commercial, and Nikki convinces her quite forcefully that she needs to go see the Westgate people. Like, Lenny, you have to do this. Like, this is important. But he's probably right. Like, she needs to get out of the palace. She needs to be more relatable. She needs to go to where they are. And she's got to address them directly. She's got to listen to them. But anyway, as she leaves the palace, Ed summons Herbert to his place. He's horizontal now, though, because she's really done a number on him. And he sees her trip as a desperation move, right? She would never do that if she wasn't desperate. There's an end game here. Her regime is falling, and we need a plan together. My experience in the chancellery and your common touch.
He's in touch with the common man. That's what I'd like
yes.
to see.
Common touch and vision. Yes, vision too. Vision sounds like a good word you'd want me to use. Yes, vision. And this is where Herbert like says, you know, we'll do it. We'll do all of it. We'll do, yes, land reform, factories, all of it. Cut out the Americans. Yes, we will. After we stabilize the economy. So this is where Herbert starts to doubt Ed. Because I feel like he was warming up to Ed. And this is a step away from him.
I agree. This feels very synthetic in that, like, Ed's going to try to use him now.
Yes, exactly.
Like, also, this is why you're buddied yep. with me. This is it. Okay.
Yes, you use too many words.
Yeah,
when he said that, that's you could tell that's over. You used too many words.
One word too many.
Agnes gets a map link via text, and she's listening now because if this is actually coming from America and not from within the palace, she really has to entertain the notion of getting out with Oscar because things are coming to a head here. Elena visits Westgate. It smells like dog turds, but you get used to it. She assures the sugar beet union that she will work to curb Chinese imports and Westgate will rise again.
That was really easy.
Yeah, right. They even gift her a potted sugar beet, which she instructs Nikki to chuck down the road.
Imagine if, like, news reporters, I mean, I'm pretty sure state-owned media in this country is like, she has control of it. Imagine if someone like gifted that to the president, and then they just chucked it out the window. That was on the news. It'd be hilarious.
It would be. It would be. I mean, it would undo everything she just did.
Oh yeah. I mean that. Oh yeah. I mean that's not a good side of relations.
No. No.
Although I would argue, it shouldn't matter, right? Like, I mean, they just didn't like the gift. It's kind of disrespectful to throw out the car, but you know, maybe she'll still keep her word.
It's symbolic, though. It's like, symbolic. This is what our meeting today meant to me. Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely.
Oh, I think it was absolutely nothing. But anyway, Agnes takes a call. They want info to help topple the regime in exchange for her escape. And she says, never call me again. Because she fears she's being eavesdropped upon. But also now there's a quid pro quo. It's not just we're going to get you out of there. It's we're going to get you out of there, but you got to help us.
Yeah.
And she doesn't – I don't think she has any interest in bringing Elena down. But she does have an interest in getting away from Elena. Elena tells Laskin to protect their country in that very special way that only he can, by planting guns and money in the Sugar Beet Union office. Then we get your favorite scene, so we'll jump ahead to the last scene. Laskin retrieves Herbert the next morning. He certainly got her attention. The news reports the raid. The Sugar Beet Union conspired with Americans against Elena. Now she can protect against the violent protests instead of being the aggressor herself. They need to batten down the hatches. No one leaves the palace, including Oscar. No Western technology or Chinese. Enter Herbert, who is, let's say, DTF. And so is Elena. So they go at it right there. Nothing Nikki can do.
It's like ship him as a Herena.
Herena. I guess so.
I guess I don't ship it as well as I ship Burbank.
How about Albert?
Man. Just the relationship in general. How much do you ship their relationship?
I mean, that's a tough one.
I don't hate it, but I'm not crazy for it. You know,
I'm just trying to figure out what's more dangerous for this country, them together or them apart?
I think Elena seems pretty dangerous for the country, period.
Without Herbert? Yes, she does. But when is she more dangerous? By herself, where civil war is about to start, or with Herbert, where she's eating dirt and tanking the economy? I don't know.
No, I don't know either. I mean, she takes the economy even without Herbert. That was her idea, the Fabian Corridor.
Well, yeah, but she's got the Chinese partnership now. So, I mean,
that'll fix all the problems.
Should fix everything, right?
Yeah, that's true. It's true. Wayne, we're priming the pump.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Kurt, let's check the time.
Oh,
what time do you have?
It's TV time o'clock.
Oh, TV time o'clock.
Ain't no time like a TV time.
All right, I believe the people have given every episode a 5 so far, so I believe they give this one a 5 as well.
Definitely, yeah, it's a 5.
They did 47%.
I bet you there's going to be, how many are 1%? A lot of people have to be mad that Hugh Grant died.
3% is at 1 star, which is, I think, the most. It's only ever been 1 or 2%, so this is the most that have been on 1 star.
It's because Ed died.
Probably. All right, so speaking of Ed, I think that the people voted for Ed as their favorite character.
I agree.
And I also think you voted for Ed.
As your favorite character.
This is the only chance I have to do it. Yes,
you
I
gotta. Of course. Well, I'm gonna vote for him next episode too, regardless. Right. If Lost just taught me anything, it's the Sawyer fan club.
He's just built in now.
The baked in.
Yeah. Yeah, check out our Lost coverage, all of it. We have all 6 seasons. All right, so I did say Herbert. You got me correct.
You said Herbert?
Not Herbert. I'm sorry, Ed. Okay. I did say Ed. I think you have to in this episode. He was so good, and this is all we're going to get. Voting for Herbert. Not Herbert, Ed. I keep saying Herbert. Why? I'm looking at Herbert's picture here. That's why.
Oh, did he win?
He did not.
Oh, okay.
But neither did Ed. Elena still holds on. Really? Only 69% this time. That's her lowest showing.
Who Hugh Grant is?
He got 21% of the vote. He was second place.
I think they're in love too.
They don't love him.
They don't.
They love her.
Oh my goodness. They like Herbert.
All right. So Kurt. Last I checked, IMDb does not have a title for next episode. Max has not, and HBO have not published the title as far as I can tell. But on TV Time, it says that the title of next episode is All Ye Faithful. So I guess That's the best we can do. Maybe the title of the next episode is All You Faithful.
Gives me religious vibes, but not necessarily. Maybe culty. I don't know. I mean, just it could also be any sort of organization. Oh. I mean, it could also be version among the ranks, right? Like there's overthrow attempt and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. All the faithful gather because we'll protect you. And we'll defend you against those horrible.
Yeah, it's probably actually what it is more. The impending civil war.
So I am looking on IMDb now, and they have also got All Ye Faithful listed as the title for episode 5. So two sources. I think that's confirmation enough for me. So next week we will
take that.
Yes. So I will tell you folks, though, next week's coverage will be dropping a lot later in the week, actually. Like, you should have it in time to listen to it before episode 6, before the finale. But next episode is the penultimate episode. I am going to be going away on vacation with my family next week. So we are going to have no, wait a minute.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Never mind.
We've changed plans. We were going to be late.
We have changed plans. We were going to be late, but we're not. No,
on time. You'll get on time. Now, it might be a little shorter.
That's the rub.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're going to have to do a somewhat abridged version of the podcast for episode 5 because
I just want you to know, Mr. Sell, yeah, he chose himself and his family over us.
I'm sorry.
I'm with you, listener. Don't worry.
Boat. You know what? I tell you what. If you want to do the recap without me, I'll hang up and continue.
I wouldn't know what to do. I'm so used to having someone else to talk to.
I know. I thought about that.
I would just talk to the listener directly and be like, isn't that unique? Real odd, right? Anyway,
it'd be so awkward. I would not like that.
It would be just asking questions and comments into the ether, then leaving room for where it's just. Ugh.
But you can hear them now, so they could talk to you.
It's too many voices at once. I've learned. I don't know if I'll use that feature again. It scared me.
Have you ever seen Bruce Almighty?
No, I have not.
Jim Carrey and Morgan Freeman. Jim Carrey gets God's powers. Morgan Freeman plays God, and. One of the things that one of the little shticks that they have is that at certain times he's just inundated with prayer requests, like, so he can't hear anything. It's just this jumbled mash of prayers.
So he can't answer any of them.
Right. So anyway, that sounds like what it would be like if all the listeners talked at once.
Yes, exactly like that, actually.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So we will be back next week to cover All You Faithful. It'll drop on Thursday, but it will be shorter than usual. We probably won't recap all the scenes. We'll still have all our segments. Don't worry. Our segments will be there, except maybe the recap will not. That's the only one that may not be there. But you know what? If you watch the episode, do you really need the recap? It's entertaining. We're entertaining. I think we're entertaining, Kurt. But
I think you're entertaining, yeah.
Oh, wow. Thanks.
So, I was going to be mean about it and say I'm entertaining, but then that's just kind of mean.
Well, anyway, we'll be back for the finale coverage as normal the next Thursday. Okay, but we'll be here. We'll be here Thursday. I want you to know, listeners, I'm going to stay up very late to make sure this recording happens so that we can get you your coverage of episode 5.
Well, I won't
All
be.
You Faithful on yeah, time.
I won't be staying up late, though.
Well, that'll be interesting then. I guess we're going to see how it works. But you have some other things you can do with Showhoppers. We've talked about a lot of our other series already on this podcast. So you can check all those out. What did we talk about? We talked about Lost. We talked about Artful Dodger. We talked about Culprits. We talked about Severance. We talked about Dexter New Blood, Ozark. That was a lot. We dropped a lot of our other series on here. But you know what? We have over 20 series that we've covered, so there's a lot more in there too. Go scroll through our back catalog, over 400 episodes. Check out something else too. It's something that you've already seen in, like, Outer Range, for example. Season 2 is starting shortly after the regime ends, and we'll be covering season 2. We've got full season 1 coverage already.
And I mean, if there's a series that you're really into, search the series and Showhoppers in your podcast app or whatever thing of choice. And if you don't see it, email us, soaperspodcast@gmail.com. Give us a recommendation.
That's a great point. While you're in that app, go ahead and give us those 5-star ratings and reviews. Click that subscribe, like, download, follow button. We love all that stuff too. You know what? We're grateful for that.
Shoe hammer some show hoppers into your day.